Hey, everybody. Welcome back to episode 18 of Opera Now, as of yet unnamed, but when you download this, you'll know, because normally I don't put the name on until after the fact. I like to see what comes up. But welcome to the 18th show. Who thought we would have made it this far? I certainly didn't. We've got some exciting news for you. A couple things. If you go to our website, operanow.blogspot.com, you will see we now have an Opera Now hotline. You can leave us a message. The number for that is 206-424-3617. Also, we are now an Amazon associate. And if you look on the page, you'll see a little search box for Amazon.com. So if you are planning to buy anything through Amazon.com, go to our website and do your search from there. That way I get a kickback. Believe me, I'm not going to make any money on it, but it can help defray expenses, bandwidth, storage, and maybe we can even upgrade our equipment in the near future to produce an even better show. So be sure to check out our website, do your shopping for Amazon there, and call the hotline. More, we'll be giving you that number, of course, at the end of the show as well. Today, joining me are Roberta Rice.
Hello.
My beloved bride and lovely wife. Mr. Kevin Keyes.
Hello, hello.
Our old friend, Matt Barresi.
Hello.
And our even older friend, Benji De La Fuente.
Hi, evening everyone.
Welcome aboard, Ben. You know, also another announcement, I haven't made this yet, I keep forgetting to, but our good friend Brian McGilvray, our frequent panelist, one of the originals, and his wife, Anne, had a baby boy a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
Little Liam.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Liam, what's his middle name?
Don't remember.
Liam something McGilvray, so he's happy and healthy and doing well, so our...
Great news.
Congratulations go out to Brian and Anne. Let's jump right into things today. What's going on? What's going on? Here's an interesting story I saw in the New York Times. That actor has a pretty good voice. Typically, when Rossini's Figaro, the title character in Barbara Seville, first appears and sings his famous Largo, he's alone, addressing the audience. Blah, 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 blah. But the charismatic, robust Swedish baritone Peter Mattei, a youthful 41, is no typical Figaro. And director Bartlett Scheer's boldly inventive and breezy production of Rossini's favorite is no typical staging. Apparently he's coming out on the stage. He's not some humble tradesman, big-time operator with a wagon, and he's got a bunch of people, a bevy of beautiful broads surrounding him, a donkey even on stage. That's pretty exciting. So, yeah, I mean, this is a Tomasini, I believe. Tomasini, excuse me, who thinks that this production is pretty hot shit. And that there's a lot of things happening. Some of the things, you know, certainly we've been talking about drama and music and, you know, does there need to be more? Was there ever not enough? All those kinds of things. But apparently he's saying that this is the real deal. Anyone have any thoughts?
Well, I didn't get that from the article. I got from the article the question, is there a new emphasis on acting in opera?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, that's
not
kind of,
this...
I mean, that's what I said. The article is...
Well, I mean, you said that I thought you were talking about this just being a really great production.
Well, I mean, that was part of it, but you're right, he does go into further detail. It becomes more of an essay.
I think he goes on to analyze, or try to analyze at least, whether or not, because today's singers grow up, you know, seeing a lot of television, movies, and they seem to be, you know, rather image-obsessed, whether or not this is now sort of filtering into the world of opera.
He devotes a pretty good portion of it to Nathan Gunn's physique as well, I might add.
I wonder if he's got some other motive there.
Beefcake in opera. I think that's what.
Well,
it is.
Kevin, I know you're champing at the bit.
Yeah.
To get the word out there. Yeah. No. What? First of all, I think that this is not as cut and dried as people seem to think it is. There seems to be this consensus, or maybe not a consensus, but an idea that. Back then, whenever the then was, nobody acted and they just stood up there. And now we're all the singing actors. And that is first of all, false.
Balderdash, if you will.
If you will. Just, again, look at Hermann Pry in that video with Fritz Wunderlich. This guy, Mattei, I was looking at the video. He has no more stage facility or acting than Pry ever did. And that recording or that video was 50 years ago or something like that. It's not as if Lawrence Tibbett, who sang a decent Figaro, had any problems acting. The guy was nominated for an Academy Award. Down the line, on and on and on and on and on.
But I give you as the opposite of that, Robert Merrill's famous Aaron Slick from Punk and Crick. his one and only cinema that was an absolute disaster.
Absolutely, but I'm saying that there has always been and always will be a room in opera for people who come at it from one side or the other, if you will. I don't even like to look at it that way. There are the Robert Merrills who are essentially singing phenomenons, horns almost, not Marilyn Horn, like an instrument. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then there are guys like Shally Oppen.
Pienza won a Tony, didn't he?
South Pacific.
They did, yeah. It's in the article too.
Yeah, and good for him. I'm glad that I think that needs to be pointed out. I think I might have said this a while ago, that it's not so much that there's a new placement on acting nowadays. I believe that there was a new emphasis on looking the part, and that is not the same thing.
True.
And people seem to think it is. So that's really my two cents. Although, looking at this video, he seemed like a fine figure. I'd check him out.
Very tall, very handsome.
Mm. Yeah, he's a great Don Giovanni. I saw him as Don Giovanni, but it was great.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, I think that there's a greater emphasis now. I think you made a great point, which is that, you know, there have always been singers who are great singers and great actors. But now, and some of the other articles, Michael, that you've tagged point to this too, is that there's a much greater emphasis on directors these days, directors from outside the world of opera. And I think that, you know, directors who don't come from a strong musical background are more likely to emphasize, you know, the acting portion of their productions. At least that's my observation. But I think that's also mm-hmm. something that is worth talking about.
Matt here, I think that because we're talking about Buffa, and as you know, I'm a sort of a farceur, and I'm a big fan of Buffet.
Buffitatis.
From Friends? What?
I have yet to see this new production of Barber, but I saw the old one several times with several casts, the Metz Old Barber. And I remember seeing it with their sort of their A cast with
the Damro, Diana Damro?
No.
What are you talking about? Barber
Seville? It was Ruth Ann Swanson and
years ago, I'm
Dwayne
sorry.
Croft and yeah. Of course, the most famous Rossini tenor going on. I can't think of his name.
Flores?
Juan Diego Flores, probably.
Help me out. Yes, thank you. Juan Diego.
Yeah.
And it was excellent, and it was everything that you would want a Buffa to be. It was laugh out loud hilarious the whole time. So I went back a few nights later and saw their sort of, you know, B or C cast, sort of, you know, like a bunch of Russians you haven't heard of. And, and it was everything that makes you not want to see a Buffa. You know, just a lot of people falling down and making big faces and sort of, you know, very juvenile and asinine. And I think that, you know, certainly when in the 75 years or more when Buffa was at the top of its game in the late 1800s and 18th century and into the 19th century, there were I think singing in most of the roles was not a big deal, and a lot of these the basso buffos of the, you know, contemporary, you know, when the shows were new, were excellent comedians, famous comedians from sort of dell'arte tradition who couldn't sing very well at all, and certainly early Papagenos, people like this, really couldn't sing at all. So I think that the pendulum swung really far into singing, maybe just in the last few decades. And it might be swinging, certainly with regard to comedy, swinging back to where it needs to be a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, just a little verklempt. I think that...
Choking on bile, listening to you.
No such thing. It was completely innocuous. However, I would like to... I guess I'm posing a question to the panel. When you look at a lot of these Buffo roles that were written in the Bel Canto area and whatnot... they're pretty demanding vocally.
Certainly,
on the page.
I will say, I mean, mm-hmm. something like Mustafa from L'Italiana mm-hmm. is normally just kind of whoop and right. you know, pooped around, but his aria is fiendishly difficult to sing.
Among many others.
Yes.
And well, it's still bel canto. Even if it's yeah, buffo, right. it's still bel canto. Mm-hmm.
That one especially is very, very, very difficult.
Right. I think the singing schools were so strong back then that it was just understood that these guys, I think, would probably be able to sing those, you know, what's on the page pretty admirably, with the added benefit of, okay,
right.
they don't have to keep the perfect bel canto sound going, they're allowed to modify it for
and play
for
with
their
it,
needs.
Actually.
Right. Because, you
mean,
know, the
Rossini
guys that
was a voice teacher, actually. So.
Right. And I think, you know, the guy, a lot of the guys that would play Figaro would also play Bartolo and vice versa. I mean, no, we have some of that now, but I think they were all a little bit more, I don't know, I imagine them in my, I guess, in my own, you know, fantasy as being very versatile, both vocally and I don't know about dramatically. But, you know, again, we would look at it differently now because what they thought was dramatic then doesn't quite fly now. When you watch even Tito Gobbi or, again, I mentioned him earlier, Lawrence Tibbett, you look at them and you go, okay, that's a good actor for that time. In this day and age of Rome and Deadwood and whatnot, we have a different aesthetic. And rightfully so. I much prefer this aesthetic that we have nowadays. I like it. And one thing I wanted to mention earlier was, I don't know about you guys, but I've actually almost never found an opera nowadays, an opera production genuinely funny. Like whenever I see something like Skiki or whenever I see a Barber Seville or even, what was it, Magic Flute, the moments that are supposed to be funny or whatnot, I don't feel like that. I never feel like anybody really gets the timing. I don't know if you guys have ever felt that way, but I think one thing that the opera world today does not do well is comedy.
I agree with you very much, and I think it's a shame. And for a long time, I didn't like Buffa at all because, for you know, in my formative years, I'd only seen very, very dumb things. And now that I've seen them done...
tripped! He tripped! Look at that! Wow!
Yeah, look, he's hiding behind a chair.
Oh my
so,
god,
he's
hilarious.
Back. Look, turn around! He's right behind you!
But I think that people are you know, maybe with the rise of the directors, people are getting it more right. And one gets the impression that certainly it was a laugh riot in its day. Maybe the comedy sensibility is different, but even like maybe like a Salvatore Boccoloni or somebody in the 30s and 40s who would be known as a buffo, I gather that they were genuinely funny, and I hope we're seeing a return to that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, something I do want to say, you know, I have mentioned it, and we've talked about it on the show, how, you know, the directors or opera companies are bringing in theater directors, you know, buzzwords, people from the theater and from movies. You know, you go back to Rudolph Bing in his first season in 1950, I think it was, he brought in Margaret Webster, who was huge. He brought in Tyrone Guthrie, who was a big director on Broadway. It's not necessarily something new. I wonder if it's maybe more...
Maybe it's getting more press now.
Well, no, but if maybe it'll affect things more today in that, as Kevin was talking about, the aesthetic. Maybe the aesthetic between opera and Broadway, classical, traditional Broadway, was more similar than the aesthetic that is going on today in theater and what is traditional opera. That opera has... Not to say that it's remained stagnant, but it's remained pretty traditional, whereas theater has gone off in other directions and has become more experimental.
That might be.
I'd like to say a little something about this article. I noticed that we kind of got off on the tangent of like only talking about acting in like buffo type operas and the comic operas, but I'm not sure if this article doesn't mean to address all types of opera and whether or not there's this new emphasis on acting. And Mr. Mattei, if that's how you pronounce his name, talks about how
Peter.
He goes on to talk about how he gets ready and prepares a character, and he tries to find the right body language for a character. Now, when I think of acting in opera, what I'm longing for is not to see how clever someone can position themselves physically on stage, like slumping or, you know, leaning on your elbow or leaning on your fist on your chin. I mean, I want to hear acting in the singing. I want to hear acting in the voices. Otherwise, I zone out completely. And I think that's what's lacking. And I don't think that there's any more emphasis on acting in opera today in those terms. I'm missing real, genuine vocal acting through the music and through the words, rather than people trying to, you know, I mean, I appreciate the fact that people are trying to bring more into their physical bodies in terms of these characterizations, but that's just not enough when your medium is music.
Just for the record, Roberta said that, and I did not. So.
Yeah.
I'm not as alone as the world make me feel.
I mean, that's what makes me sad, really, is to hear these beautiful voices, some of them, you know, more beautiful than others, none of them really distinct, but today we just have beautiful people with beautiful voices, and I almost kind of have lost interest because it's just not, it's not really
Could this spell the end for Roberta and opera now?
Not opera now, but I mean, in general, I don't go to the theater anymore.
Yeah,
and that's why.
That could be.
Yeah, I usually mooch tickets. That's the only way I go nowadays.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm still I've seen a few things lately, and I'm still a bit disappointed.
Well, it's interesting. I do agree. I think it depends partially on what kind of part you're doing. I think it does affect it. There's probably more the importance of, I'm not trying to say to split the two, but I think if you're dealing with comedy, there is a much more physical element that is necessary
than
if you're doing something like Trovatore or Norma, where really everything does have to be carried with the voice and can be effectively carried with the voice. You know, those are drawn out and very static. The staging and the drama can be very static as long as the person is, it sounds cheesy to say, but emoting or acting with their voice. That's where the most, because, you know.
And with their faces, you know.
In all those roles, you know, it's more difficult, I think, to act in opera than it is to act in anything else, especially in those older pieces, because you've got one single idea and one single thought that is sometimes spun out over a period of 25 measures.
Or one word you could be singing for a long time.
And it's almost as if it's a frozen moment in time, and this person goes on and on and on about this one thought, as opposed to in a play where you say, you know, I want to go, I love that girl, she's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life, I need to have her. You know, you'll have a whole aria where you'll be repeating that same thing. And it's very difficult to keep up that energy and to keep up that thought. It's the most difficult thing in the world.
I don't know that it is, though. Because when the music is supporting every single thought that you have, what more could you ask for?
Well, I think that modern acting technique came to, you know, it grew at the same time as modern playwriting technique. Stanislavski came about with, you know, in tandem with Chekhov. Mm-hmm. And so now you're looking at material that is written before this more, you know, naturalistic, realistic kind of writing that we're used to. So it does require, it makes demands that...
That aren't... Hello?
Oh, did we lose him?
I guess we did.
Ooh.
Well, we'll get him back in sometime soon.
I was simply agog to find out.
Get him back!
If you want to hear... We're holding Matt hostage, everyone. If you want to hear the answer. Benji, are you there still?
I am indeed.
Order something through Amazon if you want to see Matt again.
You'll go to Amazon.com.
Brilliant.
I guess it just bothers me that Mr. Matei seems to be focusing more on the physical movement on stage, and he's talking about like serious and comedic characters. So,
well, maybe he thinks he's got that side of it down.
Well, I think he's a very good singer too. I mean, I think he's terrific, and I think that his point about, you know, getting into the body languages and not separating, he says that, you know, to try to separate the physicality from the music is wrong. And I think that he has a good point there, you know, and I think that...
I'm not saying that he's not correct in that. All I'm saying is I want it all. I want physical and vocal acting.
Oh, I agree with you totally about the vocal acting too. I mean, but, you know, look at, if you go to conservatories here in America, what do the conservatories teach young singers now?
Oh boy, here
we
go.
It's always, I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
It's just all about the sound, right? And obviously technique is of supreme importance, you know, don't get me wrong. However, that is, you know, do the conservatories teach young singers, do they place a kind of emphasis on, you know, learning their character, getting, you know, character preparation, you know, maybe in some places they do. However, you know, just judging from my own experience and the experiences that I know of others, I think that's really not the case.
I think in general,
it's all about the sound.
It goes back to there's just too much to cram in.
It's all about the money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Into one session a week of each thing.
Yeah.
We were talking about it.
You don't have enough.
Yeah, it was just done. Right. It was done differently.
They can talk all they
very differently.
They can talk all they want about the sound. The problem is, in my opinion, they also don't use the technique. They don't teach a technique. They teach an end result.
And some do. And we're not trying to disparage anybody, you know, because we actually have a listener, a guy at North Texas, who's a big fan of the show, and is asked to come on.
This is not directed at you, I promise.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we're just speaking in general how, you know.
Yeah.
Teaching has changed.
There are problems.
And methods
have changed. He's got to realize that there are problems. Hey, welcome back, Matt.
Thank you.
Yay.
Sorry. My house went under an overpass, so.
So you got to move out of your car. Though I am impressed. Are you stealing Wi-Fi from a Starbucks somewhere?
You know, I'm not. I wish I was because, you know, I'm paying for this bad connection.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, do you want to finish your thought, or we've kind of moved on?
You know, that was it. I was done. I hope everyone didn't, you know, simultaneously disagree with me after I cut out.
We were hanging, waiting for the – we were hoping you'd make sense of it, but if that's all you thought, then maybe it's a good thing you didn't continue. So we'll move on. We've done this.
It's kind of disappointing.
What else is going on? Amazon seeks to fill the classical recording niche. Classical, this is, of course, related to specialty chains like Tower Records and other independent music stores that have been chased into oblivion by big box retailers, which offer classical fans little else other than Andrea Bocelli's latest pop release or Baby Einstein's lullaby classics.
Oh, nice.
So Amazon is trying to step up and fill that what's missing.
Boy,
now, certainly there are other places like Archive Music have been around for a while, and you can pretty much find anything you want there.
Hey, in the second or third paragraph, this is interesting. Our first podcast was about the fall of the tower.
Here,
this gentleman, chief executive of EnviroCell, Paco Underhill, is saying that Tower's closing has been absolutely devastating for the classical music community, and the transition to online isn't as natural as it might be for products
just
of
as
the
we
younger
predicted.
Did we predict that? I think we did.
Well, Kevin, you Roberta said that. Kevin thought that they would the people who wanted to find it would find we'd find a way.
Yeah,
and they would find a way.
So I was wrong. Apparently, this has been apparently devastating. I had no idea.
And I beat Kevin.
Oh, shut up!
I know I'm personally devastated by it, but yeah, they're trying to you know stock more, and it also it becomes a question. Some people will say that classical sales have been improving, but they're lumping things like Josh Groban and Andrea Bocelli and Il Divo in there, which is not really all that stuff is adult contemporary music.
Yeah,
it's not
is.
Classical music. It's like again, as I've said before, I think on the show, it's the same type of stuff. Not literally, but like John Tesh and Yanni, they were big adult contemporary people. But now it's moved
in
the direction of
evolved.
Its people singing in foreign languages.
What will be next?
It's as if somebody crawled out of John Tesh's head. It was Il Divo, and they all popped out.
Run, Connie, run!
So.
It still remains sad because people who would otherwise wander into Tower to browse and take a look at something and maybe experiment with new music are just not going to be able to do that.
I feel so bad now.
Yeah, it's very
sad. It's not your fault, Michael. It's not your fault.
I could have done more.
Don't blame yourself.
That CD, I could have bought that CD in that store. I could have saved two stores.
Those beers we drank last week. Those beers we drank last week, we could have bought CDs with them.
Last when I got my oil changed. I could have bought a box set. I could have done more. I could have done more.
You've turned to Arnold Schwarzenegger or something.
No, that was my...
Liam Neeson.
That was our Schindler's List. It's hard to make jokes about that, but I thought we slipped it in a clever way.
Spot on.
But now we'll move on to something else.
Well done.
He said. So yeah, Tower Records is gone. Amazon's...
We'll see.
Yeah. There are already places and resources that these people have online. I don't think that just because it's Amazon, people are going to. And Amazon has a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well, they have everything.
Yeah.
Don't they?
I mean, maybe they're trying to publicize it more.
Yeah, so really Walmart. More.
And in fact, the next time you go to Amazon, Michael, you can do so through
opera now.blogspot.com. Mm-hmm. Indeed. If you want to help classical music, go to our website and go to Amazon, our good friends at Amazon.
Every time you buy John Tesh, we get a little kickback.
Yeah, and I'll even let you buy Il Divo, by whatever you want. Books, music.
All four of them.
Underpants. Oh, we've got more about that later. I forgot to tell you that. Another plug at the end of the show. So let's keep going on. Let's just jump around to different things. Whatever tickles my tickle bone, or whatever the hell it's called.
All right, Michael.
Funny
Wynn.
Bone.
Funny guy, funny bone. Here's a good thing. And now for something completely different. Eric Idle is going to be debuting a new work, an oratorio based on the life of Brian, called...
That is brilliant.
It could only be an oratorio.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what he's going to do. That's what he's good at.
Peter
it's called
the
Not the Messiah, He's a Very Naughty Boy, a collaboration between Idle and composer Jean Dupré, performed by, I guess it's Peter Onjuin. He's the director of the Toronto Symphony, and he's also actually the music director at Caramore.
Oh, He is?
Yeah. Mm. So it looks like we've lost Matt again, so I apologize, everyone. But we'll get him back in, maybe.
That would be nice.
I wish they had followed through on Peter and the Wolf Blitzer.
Yeah. That was another idea he had.
This should be delightful.
So yeah, it's great.
That'd following be great. Up on,
you know, they had the huge hit with Spamalot.
They did.
But now it's and Life of Brian seems probably like the best idea. A lot of people were thinking and hoping that it would be turned into a musical, but it's interesting that he's going to do it as an oratorio initially. Of course, I guess the biblical setting lends itself to that.
Opera Chic website. It is kind of
this is from a blog, operachic.typepad.com. She's a young woman in Milan, and you're not. So
she goes to Scala a lot, and you don't.
Right. I think she's trying. Is she trying to stick it to me? Screw it. Don't go to the website.
Nice. That's what a great idea.
She had another great post. Graham Vick will fuck up your opera house.
Oh.
I don't know. I didn't really go into it, but it seemed like an interesting story. She's apparently a big Graham Vick fan.
It would seem.
So that's the kind of humor you're going to get at Opera Chic, or Opera Chic, or Opera Chic, however you want to voice it.
All
right. Here's a chic.
Here's
There's
a big.
Okay.
Here's
She's
a big.
She's the South Park of the opera world.
I thought we were. Wait a minute.
Yeah, we're not that edgy.
Screw you guys. I'm getting here. Here's a follow up to a big story we had. Soprano wins throne knickers lawsuit. Opera diva dame Kiri Takanawa prevailed Wednesday in a lawsuit that sought damages from her because she had canceled appearances with an Australian pop singer after learning women threw their underwear at him on stage. The judge threw out the $1.5 million in damages, but Takanawa will have to pay $102,000 to Leading Edge, the company that was suing her, for court costs. So she's not getting out of this completely unscathed. That's got to be a big hit.
Wow.
Hmm.
I mean, how did she win? You know, I mean, that's not really winning.
Well, they threw out
apparently there were no contracts that had been signed and no tickets had been sold. So it was an informal agreement. I understand that that the performance was supposed to take place.
How did they think they could sue her then? If she didn't sign a contract,
breach of promise, I guess.
Something of marriage,
gentleman's agreement, or ladies and gentlemen's agreement.
I don't know how that works. But.
Oh wow.
It's a great quote. I was concerned about the knickers or underpants being thrown at him, collecting it and holding it in his hands as some sort of trophy. I could imagine her weeping and breaking down in the dock, as they have it, crying. How could I, in my classical form, perform in this way?
That's the best, in my classical form. I mean, there's just no way that she didn't know this about this singer before she agreed in principle to do it. Of course she knew that this is what happens at his concerts.
Well, and talk about showing how, quote-unquote, out of touch the two worlds are, or I should say our world is from the, you know, contemporary world, that when I first heard about this, I really wish that she had just gone through with it, taken the high road and been gracious and taken a check, which I'm sure was considerable. And I just think, I don't know. I guess I can't relate to somebody getting so bent out of shape over something like that.
Well, I'm just glad that she's going to be okay now. Though again, that's a lot of money. 100 plus, geez.
Yeah.
100 large.
Yeah.
That's a lot for court costs. Holy cow.
Man, well, I mean, you know, the articles didn't specify if that was American currency or if it
was what court
Kiwi
were
dollars.
They in? What
it was in Australia.
Was it?
It was in New South Wales State Supreme Court.
Oh, okay.
And apparently the judge said, Takanawa had reservations about the underwear, the judge found that they were not the main reason she pulled out.
Right.
Bergen, really? Who was the judge, said Takanawa had become extremely resentful that Farnham failed to attend a planned meeting with her.
Ooh.
You don't show up for a meeting with Kiri, then you're out, pal.
You better watch out.
I don't care how many panties people are throwing at you.
I think he'll do all right in the end, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a happy ending for everybody.
Kiwi.
That's what I'm...
especially the lawyers.
Yeah. Jacoby and Myers, whoever she had, Dewey Cheatham and Howe.
They needed the work.
Representing her. Hopefully they only take a cut if she wins or if the other people win. So, what else is going on? Here's an... And, you know, I'm sick of this. and I don't didn't want to talk about it because I've been so sick of him. Another Deborah Voigt article. Jesus H. She's every time I turn around, there's another article about her in the paper. You know, we know she lost all that weight. She's going to be. She looks better. Hopefully, she feels better. Hopefully, she'll live a little longer. But please, no more effing articles about Deborah Voigt.
Yeah.
You know, I'd almost wish that Opera would go back to anonymity because this is so annoying. Every time I turn around. But this one had some relevance to something I wanted to point out. This was regarding the fact that the Met has recently put up a production of Strauss's Egyptian Helen on stage. Essentially, you know, they approached her, you know, what's a role that you would love to do? And she said, I've always wanted to do this role. So they put on the show for her, pretty much for her, as a vehicle for her. And I thought that this was an interesting comparison to something we had talked about a few weeks ago about Placido Domingo, how Covent Garden and possibly, I think, if I recall, some other companies were going to mount a production of Simon Boccanegra for him because it's a part he always wanted to do. Now, it seems to me, when I look at something like this Deborah Voigt Egyptian Helen deal at the Met, you know, that makes sense. She's somebody who's been good to the Met. They've been good for her, and she's been good for them, et cetera, et cetera. They approach her. This is a part I'd like to do. It's something that's appropriate for her to do. It's little known. Let's do it. But this whole Domingo thing about, you know, I want to do Simone Boccanegra, again, it's garbage. It's a vanity project. You know, what are they thinking? Deborah Voigt, good. Placido Domingo bad in this case, I think.
They're thinking cha-ching first.
Yeah, exactly.
Art second.
I guess, but
money
still.
Money to be made. People will buy tickets.
They will, you're right.
You know?
Yeah, but still.
And that's what it's all about in the end. That's what it's all about.
Oh, I'm not siding.
Nothing but bitches and money.
I'm not siding with them, but that I don't know what else they are thinking about besides that.
I wish they would say that. When Mr. Domingo approached us, we saw a cash cow. Rather than, ooh, it would be a great triumph for him. That's bullshit.
The novelty of it. Just think of it.
Just think of all the money. I mean, the acclaim. I mean, money. Oh, it's crap. Crapola.
Yeah.
Crapola's right. Shame on you.
Yeah, but still, at the same time, no more articles about Deborah Voigt.
Yeah, really, honestly.
It's become grating. Every time you turn around. okay. We'll go to the Scotsman.com. Opera voices edgy opinions. A controversial chamber opera about the unseen activities of musicians is set to be performed in Edinburgh. David Heath's An Everyday Occurrence questions whether it is talent or connections that really count in the music business. Pretty interesting. Anybody have any thoughts on that one?
No surprise that it's a semi-autobiographical story.
Yeah.
Another vanity project, possibly? Hey, welcome back, Matt.
It was all politics.
Thank you.
I had a career, but it was all politics.
We're talking
about... Or maybe
about
I didn't have a career, so...
the story... I'm sorry, Matt. The story at Opera Voices Edgy Opinions at the Scotsman.
Ah, yes.
David Heath's An Everyday Occurrence, Talent or Connections, semi-autobiographical story set in the pit of an orchestra and bringing together satirical farce and romantic tragedy. Wow, that's a lot.
Sounds a little vague.
All he needs is irony, and he's got everything.
How could they fit that all in one evening?
Sounds like it might have some tone issues. I think they either need to come up with a better description of it or else it's not good.
They should call
as described, it's not good.
It's crap. That should be the name of it. Oh, I hated that orchestra. With this wee beady eye and that smug look in his face.
Paper is down.
Oh, heat. New. Heat and stained. New.
I couldn't see. The id was like Sputnik in my way.
Oh, that was off color, wasn't it? He'll be crying himself tonight. This huge pillar.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about this. Is this really that edgy?
We can't tell from a paragraph.
You can't tell at all.
Yeah.
And I'm obviously not going to do the research. So, but along the lines of new works, so this looks like something that was interesting. applications are now being accepted for a composer-librettist development program.
Bravo, bravo.
Tony Award-winning theater and opera director Nicholas Heitner. The problem for opera is that its conventions haven't been refreshed by a constantly evolving repertoire. Those of us who love opera.
This was kind of touched on in our one of our podcasts.
It was, yeah. So they're going to be there's going to be this program for composers and librettists to work together.
Undoubtedly because of that.
There's not a single full-time training program for opera composers and librettists at any opera company in the U.S. until now. So this organization, ALT, designed to address fundamental problems with the development of new opera in this country. Core curriculum classes, training, hands-on workshops with country's leading working artists. Opera company partners, which are going to be City Opera, the New York Theater Workshop, the Vineyard Theater, Primary Stages. Looks pretty interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was really remarkable, the statistics in this article explaining that between 1991 and 2005, 261 new operas were produced in the United States, but only 4 of them have had 5 or more stagings since their premieres. That I was shocked to read that. Really,
Yeah, there's no citation, so I mean, who knows where these.
So it's not that they're not being produced. It's just
probably
that,
from Opera America. I think I read something similar to that.
Mm-hmm. I don't really understand. Then I mean, people just aren't, audiences aren't connecting with them, or are they not good?
Well, Matt, well, what is your take on this?
Well, as far as the whole program, I think it's a godsend. It's hard to imagine anything bad coming of it. You know, I wish.
Wish they had that when I was a kid.
Exactly. And yeah, I know that one of the most impressive things about it, I know that Lawrence Edelson, who runs the program, has been working hard for a couple of years now to get the funding so that there's no financial discrimination here, because not only is it tuition-free, there's a stipend, a rather generous stipend.
Wow.
Oh, really?
And so nice. Many programs like this, so many fellowships, are only for trust fund babies because you can't afford to...
Like
not Buster,
from,
you do it. So they've knocked
Arrested
that out, and that's right. Exactly, Buster Blues. So it's amazing, and we said on the New Works podcast here several episodes ago. Yeah, on Art Isn't Easy, that there's no real training program for opera. You get a successful poet or a playwright who comes in and tries his hand at an opera, or a composer from somewhere else tries his hand once. So it's a novelty, it's a hobby project, it's a vanity project. And the craft is
vanity
never
project.
Focused on as such. So this has got to be good artistically. However, and we touched on this as well in that program, but there still isn't, I don't think, a financial incentive to do second and third productions of new works. So maybe some of these works were wonderful. I've seen new works that I enjoyed quite a bit that you don't see continuously because you get that big old bounce from having a premiere and lots of people come buy tickets. And, you know, a second performance of something is neither a premiere nor standard rep. So I don't know that the money's there to be an incentive, but artistically, this is a good thing. It's very exciting.
Yeah. It looks interesting. Just looking through some of the people, Mark Adamo,
Bolcom
and a dramaturg, Corey Ellison, who's great. She works at City Opera. Anthony Davis, who's a composer, Rhoda Levine, director. Though it seems to me, as I'm looking through this, there's no real, like, words man.
You know, I think there's something in that press release that says that they're still trying to put together their word side.
Okay.
So I think they haven't gathered that staff yet, and I hope they'll be successful there. It's tough because there's not a lot of dedicated librettists that you can say, well, there's a successful librettist. I mean, there are some, and hopefully they'll be involved.
But it seems like that's an important thing that they need. Words and music, man. Word man, yeah. Just like Eddie and the Cruiser said.
Well, hopefully, because there are dedicated librettists in the program, they're going to have to find somebody, or else they'll just be, you know, free labor for whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they'll be working in the scene.
Write me
shop
a catchy rhyme. Does this rhyme?
Give me a C, a bright and bouncy C. So.
Yeah, well, it's definitely needed for certain. Just the other day, I was at a bar, like I do. And I happened to actually run into a bunch of the composers that attend the school that I'm currently finishing up my master's degree at. And so we just got to talking about composing. And so then specifically talking about composing for the voice. And I'm certainly no expert on the subject, but all of them came up to me at one point or another in the subsequent week and said that was the most informative thing I'd I'd ever heard about the voice and what to look out for. And we just talked about basic things about, you know, the passaggio and certain voice fox, you know, a tessitura, you know, keys that will work better than others, things like that. And, you know, there they were getting degrees in this, and they had no idea. They had no idea, even these basic things. And so I think this is a glorious, well, it could be a glorious thing. I mean, mm-hmm. and they definitely have some faculty that, you know, I don't know, Davis's work was a little bit kind of against the things that I told those guys to do, but, yeah. you know, he's an accomplished composer nonetheless.
They were really big. I did was working on a production, the thing that he did at recently at Omaha, that Rhoda Levine was involved in and Anthony Davis. And actually, we did two that were separated by about 6 months, two extensive workshop sessions for the piece. So, and the great thing was that we did it the first time. We gave him a lot of feedback, and a lot of the feedback we gave him was instigated and put into the revised edition. So he was very open to critique and to trying to find a way to make things work better. So
that's awesome.
That was great of him. So don't be dissing my man, Anthony.
No, if there's one red flag that popped up as I read this release, or if there's a few red flags, it's that they do mention being dedicated towards diversity. I know they want at least two of the programs, so two of the I guess eight people that they would have come in, they want to write in Spanish if they can. And I think that's very wise, because there's, you know, you see how many singers now come from Spanish speaking countries, so it would be exciting to have more Spanish rep. But they use the term relevant a couple of times on the paper, and I just hope they don't get bogged down in, you know, identity politics and in trying to reinvent opera or be relevant. No one gets on, you know, Ticketmaster or goes to an opera website and say, boy, I hope I can find something relevant to see tonight. I hope that they just focus on compelling drama, on compelling musical drama.
I want to see myself
compelling
up
musical
on stage.
Comedy. Yeah, it's, you know, if you can tell a compelling story well that has, you know, that has some kind of political relevance or something, more power to you, but that shouldn't be what you're focused on. So hopefully they'll focus on, you know, a compelling story.
Let's hope.
We shall see.
Time will tell.
I can't imagine them not, you know, if they're all up in opera houses and talking to singers all day. I think they'll be focused on the craft and not just on waving a flag, but we'll see.
It's got to be certainly relevant and important, but it's also got to be practical in a lot of ways.
It's got to be good.
Yeah,
it's got to be good.
And it's got to be doable.
It's got to be good.
Yeah. There you go.
They better create something good, otherwise it'll all be for naught.
Because if they don't...
We're going to come after them. Why you... So let's start to wrap things up. A new segment I want to start doing on the show are...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ridiculous items of the day from a page out of my old pal.
What have we been talking about the rest of the time?
Oh, Matt!
Hey, hey.
that was highly relevant.
Zazing!
Okay, here we go. In Cincinnati, the Pops are accused of blacklisting the Dukes. Apparently, Tom Wopat and John Schneider, who were both on the Duke Bowen Luke Duke, and who have both gone on since to have pretty successful careers as singers and as Broadway performers. They were going to be doing a, you know, a Pops concert, and they wanted to give it like a Dukes theme. And apparently a lot of people were upset. They thought that the show was symbolized a lot of, you know, things like racism, and a lot of the people didn't want to have that associated with the concert. The orchestra decided some people could be offended because the Confederate flag was on the General Lee.
Oh, so we're losing it.
Of all times for Cincinnati to develop a conscience about race relations, it's now. Yeah.
No kidding.
I mean,
no
right.
Kidding.
Apparently,
right as the cup of happiness is at our lips when we get to see the Dukes of Hazzard with the Pops. Come on.
This is an old saw for the Duke boys. They're just making their way the only way they know how, and it's just a little bit more than the law will allow. Well,
apparently, when they had come up with the idea for it, the who is it? Krisnak, I guess, Carrie Krisnak, the orchestra spokeswoman, reached out to the NAACP to find out their reaction. And
so she's a snitch.
Yeah. And then apparently the NAACP did not want to support an effort like that. So,
well, I was really glad to learn in the article that the guy who played Cooter was actually active during the civil rights movement. Yeah. I had no idea.
He was a congressman.
Ben Cooter. Cooter was
Cooter.
Yeah.
He held a number. He held a number of fire hoses on black protesters, and he stood on several steps to make sure that black children.
He was very.
Send your email to Opera Now.
Send it to HilliardandBrazy.com.
What's that hotline number again, Michael?
Do not contact me. You now, bastard, Matt. You are.
Now the show is finally what I'd hoped it would be.
Now we're cooking,
Matt.
Yeah.
Now we're cooking disgrace. With racism.
The seed was planted when Michael said Bill O'Reilly. That's
Matt,
when it began.
Matt Jones, his opinions do not reflect in any way Opera Now or its editorial staff.
Except for Michael.
Yeah, unless I say something that's funny. racist.
I don't know about you, but I think them Duke boys in trouble.
Oh, yikes.
What are you boys doing up here on these stairs of this school? Okay, moving on. In Vienna, can Opera make vagrants pack their bags?
Oh, please.
Vienna is hoping that Opera will succeed where police have failed in driving drug addicts and drunks out of the city's underground network. Drug addicts have refused to move from the city's main Karlsplatz underground station. We will be playing classical music and broadcasting opera on specially installed TV screens.
That'll get them out.
She said she hoped the music would force the troublemakers to move on. These sort of... This is very chilling to come from a Germanic person. These sort of people are not known for their love of opera. Just the phrase, these sort of people, strikes me as chilling. But are not known for their love of opera and classical music, and we believe they will not hang out. Those that do might find that civilized music encourages civilized behavior.
They'll probably grab their ears and cover them and scream running away.
I don't know. The Viennese are clearly unfamiliar with the big Chinese guy in the subways of New York.
Yeah, who, that is great, that bass with the Casio.
As Steve Hong said, yo, that guy's nice. And he can be heard usually these days, Sunday afternoons about 1 p.m. in the downtown 77th Street stop on the 6th. And he does, I mean, I think homeless people love this guy. You know, they gather around, and, you know, I think the Viennese have it all wrong.
Yeah.
Watch it backfire in their faces.
They have public toilets that have play opera music.
Opera is everywhere in Vienna.
It is the city of music. It's just
even among the homeless.
Yeah, it has to be. I don't know. I mean, I suppose they know they're homeless better than
they're pretty classy homeless in Vienna.
I would think.
And I guess they're trying to get rid of drug addicts as well. So people just shooting up under the bridge, unter the bridge downtown. So
maybe Dokken would be a better choice.
I think they're going to play Johann Strauss, and they're hoping that they'll just waltz out in a fit of waltzing. They'll just find themselves, you know, somewhere else the next day.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we'll see.
I'm eager to see the follow-up stories on that one, Michael.
Again, as my good friend Bill O'Reilly says, we will be monitoring the situation closely. And that's the talking points. Here's another. It's kind of opera related in that this person is a great friend to opera, but this story pisses the hell out of me, so I'm talking about it. Carol Burnett has filed a $2 million copyright infringement lawsuit against 20th Century Fox, claiming that her cleaning woman character was portrayed on the animated series The Family Guy. Now, it was. The story was Peter in Cleveland, a couple guys, they go to an adult bookstore. And they make some comment how that the woman who's cleaning up, don't worry, the woman who cleans up is Carol Burnett, the charwoman. And they showed Carol Burnett, that famous figure of her with the mop and the bucket, sweeping up on the thing. And now she's suing them for $2 million. You know, this woman made her bones satirizing and making fun of TV and making fun of the movies. You know,
yeah, she made fun of Gone with the Wind.
Famous scene.
And...
What the fuck is she thinking? This is absolutely ludicrous. How could she has lost? She must be crazy, or some lawyer must be telling her to do this.
But she doesn't need to take anyone's advice. It's her fault, you know. She's doing.
Well, that's what I don't know, because I don't understand how a woman.
If a lawyer approached her and she really didn't think it was, you know, decent or necessary, she wouldn't go through with it.
Yeah.
So she is to blame.
One would think.
She is to blame. This is ludicrous. I hope she has to pay court costs as well, like Dame Curie. Or I hope they make her clean up in a porno shop. That would be her sentence. Because this is absolutely ludicrous.
Is this the most ridiculous item of the day?
Agreed.
That is the most ridiculous item of the day. But now we'll move on to another segment. Guess who died?
Hey.
We have two people pass away recently. The first, Natalie Bodognana, 98, a soprano at the Metropolitan Opera. An American soprano, with that name. Interesting. Sang at the Met in the 30s and 40s, later became a voice teacher. Died on, when was it? I guess I think March 6th or 7th.
12th.
In Santa Barbara, California.
March 12th.
So I can't tell you any more about it because the story has now moved to the Time Select archive because it was from too long ago. So she has passed away, you know. Requiem. And Swiss opera singer Ernest Haefliger has passed away in Lucerne, Switzerland. Renowned for his oratorio. Did we lose Matt
Neither.
Again?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Oh, you had another story.
I'm going to destroy your Requiem for the Swiss, so you should finish that.
Okay, yeah, he passed away. Died from acute heart failure. He was a leading tenor at the Deutsche Oper between 52 and 72, sang all of Mozart's tenor roles, recordings with Columbia Records, Deutsche Grammophon, including a recording of Fidelio. Brought him several awards. Salzburg, Glyndebourne, German Bach Choir. Big time guy, but he's gone now. So, again, I do this because, you know, most people don't hear about these singers when they pass away. So, and some of them they know and some of them they don't know, but I think it's important to make note of them and
reflect a little bit on their careers. You know?
Yeah. Look them up. Find a recording.
Go to Amazon.
Go to OperaNow.blogspot and go to Amazon and search for their names. But also Matt has brought to my attention. Matt, do you want to take this?
I seem to recall a situation from a long time ago when Carol Burnett was in another lawsuit. So I just looked on Wikipedia, so you know it's true. And it says Burnett drew attention in 1981 when she sued the National Enquirer for libel after the tabloid described her alleged public drunkenness purportedly with Henry Kissinger. Sued for an unprecedented $1.6 million, but it was reduced to $800,000 on appeal, and they settled out of court, and she donated a portion of that money to the University of Hawaii Journalism School. So we'll see what her
This 81 deal seems a bit more.
Oh, it seems valid. The 81
seems
deal,
more valid. This is absolutely ludicrous.
Now I'm seeing a pattern of litigiousness. So
well, it is spread over. Period of over 20 years. I don't know how much of a pattern that is.
It's a pattern.
But this Family Guy deal is bullshit, especially with the career she's had and the.
And
way
this
she
might
made
be the legacy
bones.
She leaves for the next generation is that she's the bitch who sued.
She,
Family
you know,
Guy.
She should have been flattered that was you know in a way that she's still like thought of.
Yeah, it was an homage.
And they referred to her many times. Yeah. And in another way, there's a scene when he beats up Jimmy Fallon. Complaining, you know, yelling, how dare you think you can break on stage all the time? Who do you think you are, Carol Burnett? Nothing gives you that right. So yeah. they're big fans of her.
What and this do you want? this adult bookstore sketch, it was off color, but by no means disrespectful, really. I mean, that's weird to say when they put her mopping the floor at a porn store, but it
obviously
wasn't,
we know what she's mopping up, but still.
Yes, but it wasn't an attack on Carol Burnett in any way. So.
No, not at all. Okay. So we'll get off that. Oh, so that was Guess Who Died?
Say it ain't so.
Yeah. Now I'm all mad. So we'll put this show to an end. One other point, though, I did want to bring up before we finish up.
Ernst Haefliger would have never sued Family Guy.
No. Family who?
Harvey Korman? he would laugh right along.
That's what I want to hear what Harvey Korman has to say. And
Tim Conway.
Tim Conway and what's her face?
Vicki Lawrence.
The night that the lights went out in Georgia. I was going to say the night they drove old Dixie down. That's Cleveland Little. That's not. One final point about new addition to the website. We now have the Opera Now store. Mm-hmm. Go to the Opera Now. Go to the links. You can click on the store. You can buy mugs, T-shirts, classic thongs for you ladies out there who want to have a picture of me over your business.
Over your lady business.
Over your hoo-hoo.
Over your thunder.
Your hoo-hoo, yeah. Your na-na-na-na. So check out the Opera Now store. A lot of reasonably priced items. Reasonably priced.
Yeah.
And again, I don't
especially
make...
Especially, there's a dog T-shirt as well.
Yeah, very. There's pictures of everything there.
And you know, with Easter coming up, I can't think of a better way to celebrate the resurrection of Christ than to buy for all your loved ones an Opera Now T-shirt or dishwasher safe coffee mug
or mouse pad.
Wow, you got mouse pads too?
Oh yeah,
you betcha.
Oh, the store, betcha. The store's growing by leaps and bounds every day.
I am there.
So
I am there.
Well, listen, this was a. I want to thank everybody for coming on. This was episode 18. What a happy anniversary! I want to thank Roberta Rice.
Oh, you're welcome.
Kevin Keyes.
My pleasure.
Benji.
Thanks for having me.
And, of course, the In-N-Out Matt Barresi.
Always a pleasure to be In-N-Out of Michael Rice.
Always a pleasure to be In-N-Out of Michael Rice. It's his show. So thanks for listening, everybody. Once again, if you want to visit us, go to the website, operanow.blogspot.com. Email me at operanow@gmail.com or call our hotline. Leave a message for me, 206-424-3617. We had one guy leave a message for us, it was kind of garbled. I couldn't really hear him, but he left me some tip about a website for breathing, which I will investigate and put on the website probably sometime this week. So, thanks again for listening, everybody. Opera Now is over and out.
I can hear the music.
What a triumph. What did you guys think of the music, the new music?
I didn't hear it. What is it?
Spanish Flea Better.
Kevin, you haven't listened to the last two shows, have you?
Wait, is it the Sergio Mendes Spanish Flea?
No, we used to have Spanish Flea by Herb Alpert. But Herb Alpert, his lawyers contacted me.
Oh, really? Is that what happened?
No, I wish. That would have been great.
We wish.
That would have been fantastic.
$2 million.
I'm certainly thinking that I have no fear of the Tijuana Brass, because I'm sure Herb Alpert has screwed them out of any royalties. Maybe I could sick the Tijuana Brass on him. He'd be found bludgeoned to death. But no, I thought I'd shake it up. I went with Mañana is Soon Enough for Me by Jackie Davis, which some people may know as the sausage grinding music from Seinfeld, when Kramer and
Newman
are making sausages.
Yes.
Jerry's apartment.
Yeah. I like it. I like to shake things up.
You should.
It's not bad. I just miss the Spanish fleet.
We've got to keep evolving.
We do. Just like Mortier said.
Well, my friends, this has been a slice. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to cut out ASAP. So
heading out to drink?
Absolutely.
Picking up ladies. All you ladies out there with beware of Kevin's VD. That's my only advice
A's
to you.
A's on the prowl.
Mike. Con!
Any other one-liners before we cut out?
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Excellent.
Yeah, I got nothing.
I am going to go home to my wife and trim the hedges and be tender with her.
Oh, Peter. You're nasty.
That's good.
Wow.
Really good.
It's better than mine. I have to go work on that. I'm going to go hang my head in shame.
Oh, Quagmire. Right. You're what the Spanish call El Terrible.
Yeah, screw you too, Matt. Oh, wait, did he follow
No,
me?
Roberta.
Oh, it was me.
Roberta's the one who jumps on Zoom. She doesn't care for the after show.
No, she's not a big
Unfortunately,
fan.
Her whole life in the future will now be a big after show.
She does not like to stay and cuddle.
That's she's the that's the price door. Of Marion.
Good one. All right, my friends, been good
right,
times.
Everybody.
Fairly well.
Hey, Michael, I got to ask you something. Have you been to... have you been to that bar where that cop beat up that lady?
What was the name of the bar? I don't remember.
It's called like a Jesse's Shortstop Cafe or something. It's over on it's on Belmont, but like pretty far west, like 5400.
Oh, so like as far as
past the Kennedy, like
past Cicero and
yeah,
that's Cicero's pretty like, dicey what? Out there.
Oh yeah, did you see the clip?
Oh cool. Yeah, it's terrible.
He beat the crap out of her.
God, that was awful.
And she wouldn't stay. You couldn't knock me down, Ray. You didn't knock me down. No, she kept getting back up.
And how about like the other patrons at the bar?
Nobody's
like,
doing anything.
Sitting there.
That's the city of Chicago for you.
It is. That is Chicago for you.
That girl had no business being in that bar anyway in the first place.
Hey.
So who do you call when a cop's beating somebody up? A crook?